This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 24 for May 5th, 2011. And a happy Cinco de Mayo here in the United States and for those folks south of the border. And a good evening to you. It is the Home Tech Podcast, and we are the tech guys helping tech guys out on a Thursday night. And we're glad that whether you're listening live or you're listening on the recorded broadcast, that you get a chance to join us this evening. The tech guys that usually join me every week are back, and so tech guy number one, Andrew Morris from Melbourne, Australia, and a faithful HP employee. Welcome to the podcast, Andrew.
Hi, Jim. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. How's now the weather's turning for you, right? Fall is in full effect.
It's starting to get cold. I've had to put a jumper on today.
I just want you to know I don't feel bad for you at all.
Oh, come on, you don't.
Well, you tortured us all winter. You tortured us with short sleeves and tank tops, and so. Anyways,
true.
Winter won't be that bad for you. Welcome to the podcast. The website administrator over at bios-mods.com and studying for his AP exam while we're doing the podcast, Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right, guys.
Good. It's good to have you out tonight. And I assume you're fully recovered from your trip down south?
Yeah, pretty back in new reality. So got about 3 more weeks to wrap up with school and on to tech world I go.
That'll be nice. Be nice. Your summer then gets real busy with BIOS mods and what other tech projects they have out there. Is that how it kind of works?
Yeah, I have a couple development projects for Windows Home Server 2011 in kind of alpha thought process stage right now. So I'm working on some revisements for that.
You're going to port your Magic Wake on LAN over? Is that one of the projects you're working on?
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of customer emails who are asking if I'm going to support an upgrade to it. So it looks like I kind of am going to have to. But I would like to start a fresh idea on Vail as well, because a lot of other add-ins have the Wake on LAN component covered. So, I mean, as much as I have complete and utter faith in my add-in, there was more of a need for it in version 1 than there is in version 2, because version 1 didn't have the website automatic AJAX component, whereas the Vail, I keep using Vail, but the
Windows Home Server 2011.
Yeah, the 2011 has the website refreshes without any page refresh, and some of these other ends like Lights Out have easily spread over to the dashboard because it's so easy to, with the new dashboard and web interface, literally everything's intertwined. Whereas in version 1, if you wanted to have something like Lights Out, all the computers needed client software, and one of the appeals to Magic Wake on LAN was that it was clientless. But now it's kind of an irrelevant point with Server 2011, because if the add-ins have client software, it's somehow, and I'm still researching this, but it's somehow auto-deployed from the server. So you're not even installing it on each computer. It just kind of auto-deploys through the dashboard and becomes a part of your computer. So that's pretty nice, because it'll be easier for the developers to actually get more client-side permissions from your users. So rather than having to make two separate packages, you have more control over what you want to do with that client computer because of the new features in the dashboard, which is based off .NET Framework 4.0 instead of 2.0, which they're putting a lot of new stuff in there. So if you're using the new 2011, you'll see all the client computers are automatically upgraded to .NET Framework 4.0 if they already haven't been. So that's some exciting work for the developer, but it's also a lot to migrate over from because it's very different.
So. Yeah. Well, sounds like you got a busy summer ahead of you. If you were listening to that and you had no idea what we're talking about, we all are birthed out of the Windows Home Server community. You can go out to thehomeservershow.com and get kind of caught up on what a Windows Home Server is. I'm sure 99% of our listeners, since we pulled them all over from the Home Server Show, do know. But if you don't, you can go over there and take a peek at it. And that's a fairly powerful product, especially for home backup. So it'll be great, Christian, to kind of keep up with you this summer as you get those products developed. Our third host tonight, Gordon Schmidt. Gordon has been on the show
actually, Gordon, we missed you the last time, didn't we? We put you on, and then we didn't get you back. Your second time on the show. Good to have you back in as well. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. So, well, let's get right down to business. Let me let folks know first if they want to contact the show. And I have been getting some more emails from folks. And you can contact the show podcast@theaverageguy.tv. If you haven't downloaded or if you haven't connected the podcast to some kind of RSS reader or feeder, something like iTunes or your Zune, the Zune software, you can do that as well out at The Average Guy TV. I have all the necessary links, both an automatic link to iTunes as well as a RSS feed that you can use. It works really easy. Most of the times you just click on it and it will ask you what you want to feed that into, and then you just point it to a program on your computer. So if you have questions about how to get that done, I'm not as worried about it on this show as I am on the other two. But if you do have questions, send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We're out on Facebook as well. Just type in The Average Guy Network in Facebook, and you can find our site out there. I update that whenever we post a new podcast, or if you want to interact with me out there on Facebook, you can do that. All right. Oh, and I should mention, if you want to follow us on Twitter as well, the easiest way is just follow my Twitter @JayCollison. And thanks to a couple guys. I know Dennis has been out there faithfully tweeting me at least once a week with some comments about the show. And Dennis, appreciate you doing that. It's always good to get feedback after we've done a show and get some comments from you. So this week, without further ado, this week, or actually last week, I think most people know by now that Sony and their entertainment division were hacked, and not just kind of hacked like, ha, 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 funny, we're going to change your website. But they were hacked fairly seriously. Credit card numbers and customer information were retrieved from whoever hacked in there. And I think the Sony PlayStation network has been down since April 20th. And so they're seeing 3 weeks of outage at this point. And I feel really bad for the gamers who are kind of missing their network. I couldn't imagine if Xbox 360 and that environment went down. There would be some folks who would be up in arms and screaming, and it would be major. But on Wednesday, Sony told Congress that no major credit card companies had reported any fraudulent activity based on the data that they thought had been obtained or hacked. And on Monday, Sony suspended its online entertainment portal due to a potential theft of credit card information. So they admitted that around 23,400 non-U.S. credit and debit card numbers and expiration dates may, and that is in quote, may have been obtained, and avoided mentioning the 24.6 million SOE members who may have been affected as well. So pretty big deal about credit card information getting out and getting out into the wild. Meanwhile, Sony took down the PlayStation Network on, like I said, on April 20th, and in a week later said it's 77 million members, and that's an unofficial number. That credit card information may have been stolen as well. So it just keeps getting worse for Sony. There's some things we can do, and guys, I want you to chime in on this at this point, because it just is not – I mean, so Sony's taken the brunt of this, of course, because they're out in the limelight, and we're talking about huge amounts of numbers now available out there. But this would apply to just about any company that you've been a part of. Andrew, what was the one we mentioned a couple weeks ago that had been breached?
Do
you remember? It had to do with trading accounts. I think we'd mentioned that on the show. It doesn't matter.
Not sure. I think it might have been the finance tech show, that one, Jim.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. You're
possibly,
right. It was on that show. It was the other Andrew. Sorry about that. That was Andrew Hunt.
We were everywhere.
That's right. We were talking about a company that handles transactions between – it's a brokerage. Lost some numbers, and, of course, they had to send out emails saying, hey, we've lost some numbers. So – some things you can do now, and so if you're on the Sony network and you sense sensitive information about your own personal information has been released, okay, these are the things that you should do right away, right? And some of these are no-brainers, but let me go ahead and list them out. Of course, change those passwords now. I don't know about you guys, but I do use a fairly common password or derivative of the same password, and I rarely change my passwords. Any of you guys change them more often than maybe once a month or once every other month?
I've got a password that last time I cracked it took about 4 weeks to crack, so I figure it's reasonably safe unless it's a victim of being compromised.
Okay.
So
you don't, but you don't regularly change passwords at various sites.
Oh no, I've been using this password for years. So.
Okay. Gordon, are you paranoid about your passwords, or do you like everybody else?
Well, my wife still uses the same password across the board, but I use KeePass and keep everything in there with a master password. And then use Dropbox to sync that to my mobile phone.
Okay. That's a great idea. I probably need to get in that because you can go in there. It'll generate passwords for you, right, as well?
Yep. Yeah, you can set the encryption level, whether you want 256-bit or whatever, and then it gives you out your password. You can drop that in there so it's completely anonymous.
What's the cost on that?
KeePass is free.
Okay.
And then related to the security issues, LastPass actually had a breach yesterday, I think it was. They trolled through their logs and things, but didn't see anything that actually got out that could harm anyone. But still a little iffy about LastPass and storing all my passwords in the cloud, even if it is the highest security. I went with KeePass, keep it local, and then I minimized my risk.
Okay, so LastPass is a cloud-based password storage program. But KeyPass is those are all stored local.
Yep. Okay. Yep. You install it locally on your machine and manage it yourself.
Yeah. Christian, what do you guys do for password management?
For the most part, the way I do things psychotically is I have a master cipher, which is, it's like a, it's a 26-character cipher that I've memorized, and I don't keep it anywhere. So there's no place that has that master cipher. And because it's 26 alphanumeric ridiculous characters long, it's considered 128-bit strength. And what I do is whenever I create a new account, I base the password off that master cipher that I've memorized. So it's always a different password that I'm using, but because it's always based off that master cipher, even if I were to forget it, I could just go down the list of ciphers I've created and figure out which one it is.
Why did I expect anything different? Wow. All right. Well, and so that 26... that's 26 character string, right? That's the key for what you do, and you've memorized that one,
right?
That,
so
that
I
generates the rest,
right? So I don't keep that anywhere stored except my brain. So unless you're gonna tie me to a Stargate Universe computer and download my conscious, or
we just have to hack your brain. That's all.
I think you're safe. I think we're safe at this point.
Download your cerebellum here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is. I think password security is going to become a bigger deal, and I think for tech guys, it's one thing. Creating strong passwords and a system of them, at least it's easier for us because we're in that mode. I do feel sorry for the average user in most cases who may not understand what strong encryption is or be able to remember a password that's longer than 7 characters. And then one of the things I do, which I shouldn't, but I use a very similar password or the same password for a lot of different sites, and now it's strong, but it would require me to go change a whole bunch of different sites if one got compromised. So that there's it's tricky business. I don't doubt people struggle with it.
And is it just me, or does it seem like there's been more security breaches on stuff, making it even harder to keep
things secure? Seems to be fairly prevalent, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just going to get worse. Companies have to step up their security measures to ensure that their data security is good, and it's just going to get. It won't shut down the web, but it will surely shake the confidence of people in keeping that information out there. I really do think we may get to a point, though, where companies will just not be allowed to store credit card information online for any reason.
Well, what kind of legal concerns are there? I mean, like, okay, Sony got hacked, but can they be held liable?
One of my clients, we're dealing with credit card payment systems all the time, and there is a payment card industry standard for security. So to me, for Sony to get their their system hacked and lose card details, to me is a huge, you know, what just happened?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a huge breach.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, if it can happen to someone like Sony, then you sort of, in a way, without wanting to be a doomsayer, it almost asks you, or makes you ask, is your internet banking safe as well? Because, you know, that's on, you know, who doesn't bank online now?
Right. I don't think you have, I think you have to bank online.
Yeah, you know? It's pretty close to it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's certainly a wake-up call. Go ahead, Gordon.
I was going to say, at the enterprise level, I think it's a war of who's going to accept the risk. You know, so if you're doing, if an enterprise is doing business with, say, American Express, and you use that as your corporate card, are you gonna use an ID that's attached to your credit card number, and that just makes its way through and comes back to American Express? Or are you going to actually pull down that that actual card number and run it through your system through your enterprise?
I think the next risk, of course, is going to be near field communications, because you know you start looking at one of the major banks out here has just started using near field payment systems up to $20, where you just tap your card on a reader and it's paid. It's automatically authorized.
It's our app.
And how long is it? What do they call it? NFC.
Okay.
And you know they're talking about HTC already building the chip into cell phones. And you know, how long is it going to be before you get people running around with a reader and in the street? And next thing you know, you got $20 being siphoned out here, there, and everywhere.
Right. Yeah. I think we've, in the name of convenience, we might have gone a little too far.
Oh, absolutely.
At times. So I think you need to do. Go ahead, Chris.
I don't know. I don't know if it's as if we've gone too far in terms of convenience as much as we've gone too far in creating almost a standard of what to expect security-wise. So let's look at it from a developer standpoint. If I want to secure a database and a website, the average guy is going to, or the average developer rather, is going to say, all right, I'm programming for ASP.NET website. It's a website that requires an authenticated user database and all that and encrypted passwords. And the first thing I'm going to think of is, oh, well, let me just use the ASP.NET reg tool with the built-in membership profiling, which automatically creates the database and the SQL data provider, and all you do is plug in the specialized bits and hook it up to your web config, and you're done. So even though it's all super secure and that's well and good, how many hackers do you think downloaded that security documentation from Microsoft and studied that program that Microsoft wrote so that they can just see when someone's using something generic like that and plug holes into it? I mean, it's more or less just like how many websites use WordPress now. I mean, obviously there's hackers studying WordPress infrastructure every day to try and figure out stuff. So obviously the more documentation that's made available public, the less chance the average user is going to read it, the higher chance the hacker is going to read it, and the higher chance you have of just it being cracked. So it's not an easy answer, because sure, you want uniformity and you want everyone to be educated, but at the same time with security, it's ever evolving and ever changing. So if you're always doing the same thing with your security solution, chances are you're going to get cracked sooner or later. So it's kind of something that people either have to keep up with or risk getting hacked. So
it is certainly dangerous. And like I said earlier, I do feel sorry for the average user in a lot of ways. They can get, you know, they kind of screwed on this deal and not even trying. And so it doesn't take much. Okay, couple other things that folks can do now. Of course, never email your credit card information to anybody who asks for it online. I mean, you need to be on a secure site. It should be an HTTPS connection when you're putting your credit card information in, right, and make sure it's encrypted. The easiest way to do that is just look up in the browser, you know, the browser window up there, and if it's secure, it'll show it. And I think it even shows that extra on Chrome. And then, and I think it even highlights it in red when it's secure. And then, will show that. IE and Firefox will show that as well. So look for HTTPS, and that means you have a secure connection when you're connecting. But God, don't mail anything You know, if you get an email from somebody and they're asking for information, do not send that information in most cases, right? Be very, very skeptical about sending that information back.
Especially Okay. One of the recent scams that I've received emails from, and it looks pretty legit actually, is PayPal scams. Now, I've never really seen the actual PayPal site have any security problems. They've always done a really good job of having it really secure, which they really should, because a lot of people put their money in the PayPal. That being said, I've received emails from like pay-pal.com, and the dash is so small you barely see it, and you'll get an email that says like, oh, your account has been suspended. Your account has been suspended to prevent unauthorized access. Please go to this page to reauthenticate it. And obviously they're making you type in some wonderful information that they'll use at the real PayPal website. So watch out for domain names that look really similar, like the Facebook that only has one O in it, or the PayPal that has the dash in between, because there is no easy way to check that they're valid unless you open your eyes and realize it's not the same as what's on paper.
Andrew, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to say one of the other things to bear in mind, if you're going to a site that should be secure, it's somewhere in the browser, it should be showing you a picture of a padlock. So either in the title bar, if you're using Google Chrome, I think Firefox also gives you a padlock on the right-hand side, and Internet Explorer gives you a padlock, I think, down the bottom. So I'll put those in the show notes.
Oh, that'd be great.
Three common browsers.
Yeah, you know, if you're a tech guy and you're supporting your family, you know, and I don't do this enough, but take a second to show them what it should look like. Just next time you're over there, say, hey, if you're ever doing anything secure, make sure you see this. This guarantees, or at least gives you a better chance of making sure your information is secure. Walk them through that. That's just, if you expect them to just pick it up, a lot of times they won't. They won't understand it. Spend a few minutes walking them through it and make sure.
And usually, if something looks too good to be true, it is.
Yeah, right. Right. And these scams that are around, these $100 or $1,000 Walmart gift cards, none of those are real.
Yeah, exactly. And Microsoft are never going to tell you need to pay for their antivirus software, as I found out last weekend.
Oh, did you get that virus?
No, one of my parents-in-law's computer did. So I had to work that one out remotely, which was kind of fun.
That virus has seemed to slow down a little bit this week. I was getting it a ton a couple weeks ago. So, of course, if you feel like your credit card's been compromised, just cancel it, and the credit card company will issue you a new one very, very, very rapidly. We had that problem here just a couple weeks ago, and I got new cards in the mail. I always keep two cards just in case I've got one that's not working for whatever reason, and or one that's in a lockdown mode, and so that kind of keeps me honest. But if you know of someone who's been compromised, of course, sometimes the bad guys will hold those numbers up to a year. Sometimes they hold on to them to sell them in banks. And so you want to make sure, just because it got compromised and it hasn't been used within a month, you want to make sure that it is not ever used. So get that credit card number changed. And that's very easy to do through your credit card company. Okay, some things you need to do very soon. Place a fraud alert at the three major credit bureaus. And Andrew, if you drop those in the show notes, that'll be great. We talked a little bit about that on the fitness tech or the financial tech podcast. A couple months ago now, but go to the credit bureaus and you can place a fraud alert on there. That always helps, as well as just check your credit report. Again, go back if you want to know how to do that. We talked about that on the Financial Tech Podcast. I think show number 2. You can go back and listen to that. And Andrew Hunt, the other Andrew, will walk you through that process of checking your credit report. A couple things that you can do later, then not right away. This is interesting. Create a fake identity when signing up for another online gaming account. Use a spam email account. Right now, this is something, guys. Let me ask you: do any of you have you kind of created an alias account that you sign up for all your miscellaneous stuff with, an email account that you don't ever
Absolutely.
Really check? Yeah, Andrew,
yep.
You do that?
Absolutely,
Gordon.
Yep, got a miscellaneous dump email kind of trash already. Never look at it, but.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I'll be honest, I haven't done that, and I send everything to my Yahoo account, and I use other inbox, I think is what it's called, and that sorts things out as well as does a nice job of sorting through the spam, and that kind of manages it. But I think that's a great idea for anything you sign up for. Just give it that, you know, maybe it's a derivative of your regular email account, and then all that junk just goes there, and you don't have to deal with it in your inbox. Christian, do you have you got one you use like that?
Trying to think. Not really offhand, no.
Okay. Yeah, I find it
handy too if you're traveling and someone wants an email address from you, you give them that one, and if you want to communicate with them further in the future, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I have a really old Yahoo account that I kind of, anything that looks like it could be sending me newsletters all the time, I'll go ahead and put that in. But if someone wants to talk to me, I know they're going to get at me one way or another through a website, so I just give them the email.
Yeah.
And if they're really a pain, I'll just block the email from coming. But the only time I kind of have one of those false fences is if it's, you know, like, give us your email so we can send you a download link. Okay, well, that sounds like a sales bit for newsletter of the week. So here's my Yahoo account. So.
Okay. Well, a good thing to suggest, again, if you're a tech guy helping out the family and you got somebody that's got a spam problem, a good tip to give them. Say, hey, just create a junk email account that you can use for all your sign up, your newsletters, whatever, and then that doesn't have to come to your primary account. One more thing you can do, of course, this is the most severe, but you can file a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission. And if you feel like you're a victim of credit card fraud, the FTC cannot get you money back. They won't do that, but it is a good idea. They can go after whoever is doing this. Now, it's getting more and more prevalent, so I bet their hands are full and they are very busy. My recommendation, and you tell your family members this too, go back to, if it's credit card fraud, go back to the issuing company. They have whole departments that are there to help you out. And usually they're pretty good. Most credit cards have $0 fraud now. And a lot of times you're not out the money if you report it within a certain time period. So some good tips if you feel like you've had fraud against you, or if you've got family members that are getting that maybe they're, or if you were a Sony PlayStation customer, some things that you might want to do right away. We'll take that link and drop it in the show notes of some things here, and you can go back to that and make sure you go through that stuff. One last thing that I have before I kick it over to Andrew, I got an email this week. One of the services, one of the cloud-based backup services that I use called Voila, talked a lot about that on the Home Server Show, a little bit about that here. I basically just sync some of my folders, some of my music and my documents and my pictures. I sync over to an account that I made on Voila. They just have recently created a Android app. And guys, I wanted to ask you, on your phones, do you have any, you know, I use Dropbox as well. Do you guys use any other cloud-based storage services that you have access to through your phone?
I use Dropbox.
Only Dropbox?
Yep, Dropbox.
Okay.
Dropbox.
Somebody dropped a box in the background.
That would be my son.
That's great. So Dropbox for both of you. Christian, I know we use Dropbox. Any other services besides Dropbox?
Dropbox.
Okay. Well, Dropbox is fantastic. I know we've mentioned that. If you're a tech guy or your family is moving files around any other way but Dropbox, you have to ask the question why. And I think Dropbox has revolutionized file transfer. It's so fast. It's so convenient. It changes the way our church moves files around. We have three different locations, and now they just move. They move all those media files via Dropbox, and it works great for them. So the account is free for 2 gig, and if you want to go out there, and if you haven't tried Dropbox yet, it is definitely the way to move files around. All right, Andrew, ZDNet put out a report about the new tablets that are out. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, they did. ZDNet yearly put out regularly put out leaderboards for the various product types around. So they've got cell phone ones, and they've got, you know, netbook and laptop. And the one that caught my eye during the week was they've put one out for tablet computers. So I'll throw it into the show notes. But they pretty much do a 10 to 1 down ranking on the tablets that are currently in the market or about to hit the market. And yeah, so it's quite interesting. They have, well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 10 of them are Android tablets in various iterations, so 2.2 up to 3 versions of Android. There's the BlackBerry Playbook. There's one Windows 7 tablet, which came in at number 10. And number 1 and 2, surprisingly or not, was the iPad was number 1, and the HP TouchPad, which is WebOS, is in at number 2, ranked by ZDNet.
Now, I'm not stunned by number 1. In the top three,
who could be?
Yeah, the top three, right? The Amazon tablet that runs on Android, number 2, HP TouchPad, WebOS, and number 1, of course, the Apple iPad. Not surprised. And in the show notes, though, before the show, I said, really? I mean, I had high hopes for WebOS a year and a half ago. Of course, I was a Palm Pre user for about a year before I moved over to Android. But now, this isn't actual sales, right, Andrew? This is their rating of it. Is that right?
This is their ranking. That's right. Yeah. So the interesting thing for that for mine is from what I can read, the Android Amazon tablet hasn't made it to market yet, and neither has the touchpad. So you know, and I think the BlackBerry Playbook's only just hit the market. I know we don't have it.
Yeah,
down
it's
here
been
in
out
Australia.
Maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And the Playbook's running some Android applications too, isn't it?
I thought it was running BS.
Well, I think they've got some. They're trying to port some of those over. I don't know for sure. I'm sure there's some smarter folks than us that have those answers, but I don't have real high hopes for the Playbook. I don't think it's going to be one of those. I mean, I think BlackBerry users will, some will gravitate towards it. I just don't see BlackBerry as being a major. They, like the WebOS, are a little bit behind.
Well, after the announcement this week too, where BlackBerry are starting to do some work with Microsoft, or sorry, RIM is starting to do some work with Microsoft,
right,
in the BlackBerry
go.
Line, I think we might see the BlackBerry operating system slowly start the demise that the enterprise seems to be pushing it into.
Yeah, well, I could certainly see, you know, they've got a very, very secure messaging service built in with their server. I could see something like that easily getting consumed into a Microsoft environment and it just becoming a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, a few weeks ago we saw Nokia are about to start rolling Windows Phone 7 on their hardware. And the announcement the other day was that they're going to start using Bing on BlackBerry.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so it starts. Yeah,
it's the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? Really.
Well, and Microsoft has the money, and nobody else wants that stuff. So
yeah.
I could just imagine, you know, Microsoft making an attempt at all these outliers to begin to pull them in and basically take the best of their technology. So we'll see if they can do it. Microsoft's got some other problems with their phone, and they're going to pick up some phone sales just because of. History,
yeah,
but they certainly have a way to go. Hey, Gordon, what phone are you using?
I use the Android T-Mobile Vibrant Samsung.
Okay. And that, what version of Android is on that?
2.2. I did the Samsung Keys update a couple months ago.
Okay, so you got Froyo, and how's your what's your user experience been like on that?
So previously I was using Windows Mobile and then moved to Android, and I love it. I've used other people's iPhones, I've used iPod Touch, the new one, and the widgets, I think, are the ability to just download applications off the web are what make it a win for me.
Yeah, I continue to be just pleased with my Android, continue to be pleased. It sounded like I said displeased, but I've really enjoyed my Android device, and that's worked really well. It'll be interesting to see. I still kind of keep looking back at the WebOS to see, you know, Andrew, if HP can get their act together on this thing.
They haven't done a great job with desktops. Maybe they can turn it around now.
It's funny you say that, Christian, because I was talking to someone the other day who reckons they will only buy HP hardware.
Oof.
So it's just funny
yes.
How the perception varies depending on who you talk with.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely.
It must be something about like country of origin or something, because I guarantee you, like I'll look at any HP product, and it's a great price. It's got great features, and it looks great on paper. And you get the device, it works. It'll do one of two things. It'll either A, blow up when you open the box, or B, will run rock solid for a year. It will stop working the day after your limited warranty goes up, and then they will do nothing.
Are you speaking? You're speaking nothing. From experience, right, Christian?
Yes. Yeah. They will do absolutely nothing to help you. Now let's keep this in mind, folks. This is with new HP equipment. If you go to Tiger Direct or Newegg and you buy refurbished HP desktops, they run better, quote unquote, better than their new stuff, because I have bought refurbished quad cores from them that have run better than personally built computers for 3 years, and they still work because they were refurbished. But if it's something new, if it's something that says business or server, if it's something that has limited warranty anywhere within the first page, it is cursed. It will explode on arrival, and HP. Well, there's a lot of expressions that could go for that acronym HP, but
now easy now.
We've had good experience with them.
Yeah, I think that applies to any big box shipper. I mean, Dell have the same problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but Compaq had it before they were an HP company.
Right.
IBM have the same problem. So do Lenovo.
At least when you have a problem with something like Dell, you can get the lady in Taiwan or Korea to acknowledge it, that it's an issue in their database. When we had the problem with when HP released their, I'm sure you're probably familiar with all this hardware. When HP released their E9180T, it was their flagship i7 quad core for the home user. So what did we do? We bought a tricked out i7 quad core for the home user, brand new from HP. And after 6 replacements directly from HP of the exact same computer, and then the computer with a bunch of free upgrades from, I think we went from an i920 to an i950, an NVIDIA 250 to an ATI 4850. They upgraded it to like a 1.5 terabyte hard drive. They did all this great stuff. But guess what? 6 tries after 6 replacements of the original box, and even, you know, free upgrades along the way, it still wouldn't work, because the motherboard that they had contracted with Pegatron, which is an OEM subset of Asus, had some internal design flaw where you would always be getting B-sides, it would never come out of sleep, it was just weird. And it took them 2 months of denial, 2 months of sending new computers, and 2 months of talking to people to finally get them to send a motherboard that was far enough along in the revision process that worked fine. And now it's probably the best computer in the house a year later. And we probably made out the most from it because we got so many deals from the free upgrades. But the process of getting from, okay, we have a like really big problem that we need to address, from, okay, we need to like really solve this, was like non-existent.
Mm-hmm. If you just had a bad experience, though, do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, those companies, Christian, I don't doubt you had problems. The last time I had a Dell problem, they tried to sell me an extended warranty before they'd even help me. And you know, there's a trap in the large companies. One of the experiences I had this week, and I think this can relate to the average person, is I got a laptop from a friend that was from Dell. And it had all kinds of crapware on it, right? I mean, they'd had it for a year or so, and you know, you remember or not remember? Shoot, they still do this, right? The OEM, the manufacturers send this stuff forward with all this crapware on it. It's junk you don't need. It bogs it down. Now, it was a Windows Vista machine as well.
Ouch.
So let me just say that it was a couple years old. So I said, you know, go buy for me Windows 7 and let me upgrade this thing. And so I spent the weekend putting Windows 7 on fresh, loaded the drivers from Dell. And in most cases, Windows 7 found the drivers. I needed to install very few drivers from Dell. That PC with Windows 7 just – or that laptop with Windows 7 just absolutely – it was like a brand new PC. I mean, it just moved – very, very quickly and was zippy and returned back to what it should have been to begin with. So sometimes if your PC is slowing down, you're having problems with your PC. So I think some of it is related to all that crapware that the OEM, you know, the manufacturers put in embed in their copies of the OS. So if you're go ahead, Gordon.
And what's interesting is if you got retail manufacturers like Best Buy that are getting, you know,
yeah, they get their hands.
I'm assuming they're getting paid to allow their crapware to be on there, and then yeah, Geek Squad turning around and charging $100 to clean all that stuff off and then give you your machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you're a tech guy, help your friends take that stuff off and get rid of it. If you've got that stuff on there, find your tech guy and have him remove that crap. I like to try and get back. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm reimaging a PC or putting an OS back on, I absolutely try and get back to the base OS without all the additional crap that has to go along with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and only charge your friend $50 versus $100.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, be half the price. I do work for Starbucks, and so you can, you know, you can get me coffee, gift cards as well. So that works as well. So, real quick, Andrew, run through. You said here that Facebook Events is now syncing with Google Calendar. So if you're a big Google Calendar user.
Yeah, I found this one over on Lokonome when I was out looking around for some stuff the other day. I was looking to synchronize the Outlook calendar to Google Calendar, which they've released a plugin for that as well. So the application's now been updated, so you can sync the Outlook 64-bit calendar back to Google Apps or Google Calendar or Gmail, which is kind of cool. But what I also found was... there's a how-to up on Lokonome on how to sync your Facebook events with your Google Calendar. So if you do a lot of your event planning through Facebook, you can now sync it back to Google and then in turn to Android or your Outlook Calendar, which was kind of neat.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'm doing more and more events in Facebook now.
Easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great tool. There's a lot of information in there, and it's since I spend a good chunk of time in Facebook anyways, not a bad place to have it.
Yeah, so I'll pop it up in the notes, but basically you plug in your event RSS feed into your Google Calendar and it syncs them up.
Very cool. All right. Yeah, no, if you're using those calendar invites inside of Facebook, that'd be a great way to do it. And you use or you're attached to your Google Calendar. That would be nice. So, all right, good work. All right, Christian, you're up. Christian's Corner, you got a deal for us and a speed tip of the week.
It is the super cool Christian's Corner. Okay, here
nice.
We go.
I like that. We're getting closer to some
actual
music.
Closer. We're now getting like 8-bit Christian.
That would be sweet. An 8-bit little song for Christian's Corner. I'd like that.
Dig out the C64 and I'll get Sam 64 to sing it to you.
All right. So, we could up our game to 128 bit quality. That'd be cool. All right. So here we go. Deal of the week is a 2 terabyte external hard drive. It was $90 on Tiger Direct. It was kind of cute. Came in a nice little black external shell. It looks like a cool way to keep your eSATA port active on a server or desktop, and it looked like a nice form factor, so I thought it was worth mentioning. I mean, obviously it's not anything special, but not a bad price for 2 terabytes, so that was pretty cool for me. The speed tip of the week is really just about benchmarking, because the speed tips that are going to follow and the ones I've already mentioned can be measured with this tool. So the tool is a script written from the administrator of 7Forms, which is a common tech support form for Windows 7. And you just run the script, it reboots your computer, and when you're finally back in Windows, a little window comes up telling you how many seconds it took for the total reboot time. So that when you're applying these crazy tricks I tell you during the week and you really don't believe that it's doing anything for your computer, you can gauge it on the timer, and then you can, as O'Reilly would say on Fox News, you decide. So that's what I use. Yeah, so that's what I use on my computer when I'm trying to verify the authenticity of things I read online in terms of performance. So like if you want to go back and apply that hard disk tweak I talked about a couple weeks ago, the MS config stuff, and see how that shaves a lot of seconds off that timer, be my guest and send me a screenshot. And finally, this is part of my whole how can we make Windows 7 sweeter than it already is. I found this neat program called 7stacks from Alanstria Software. And what it is it's kind of a based off the new feature with the jump lists in Windows 7, where you can have, like, if you right-click your Internet Explorer or icon or your Windows Explorer icon, you can see your recent sites and just click the jump tab. But 7stacks has a really nice way of it. You install the program, and then let's say I have something like a Microsoft. I create like a Microsoft icon on the Microsoft Office icon on the start menu. I can then jump list all the Office applications off that, but not just adding the jump list, but it does a really nice presentation of like dragging and dropping what you want in a menu. So let's say I put an icon up there that's just like it looks like a utility icon. Then I can drag my favorite, you know, Windows shortcuts and whatnot, and it does it in like a extended fold-out view, and it's really cool. But to get what I'm trying to picture over audio, take a look at Alastria Software, Alastria.com, and then software and 7stacks. And if you take a look, there's actually a submenu on their website for screenshots, and it shows some pretty neat stuff. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's like an extended, not just extending your jump list, but even like you can create one icon and that breaks down into another 20 icons. So it's really like having the power of your entire start menu in these little jump lists, which I think is kind of neat, and especially for a lot of these people who have like their entire desktop cluttered with random Word documents, and you can't even see what they set their background picture to. I think it's a cool way to kind of condense and move onward. So that's the words of wisdom from Christian's Corner.
It is
a nice looking app, that one.
Christian's Corner.
Yeah, and I just had a tip on the Tiger Direct thing. In my experience, if make sure you keep the box just in case you need to return the product you get from them, because if you don't have the box, sometimes they won't take the product back. So
yeah,
Gordon, where do you put your boxes? That's always the trick.
Stack them up in the garage.
All right.
Until 90 days or roughly passes, and then get rid of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so the warranties the warranty is out. I think, you know, I still have my original Xbox box. That, you know, this is the black one, right? The small black one, the original Xbox. You know, you just you get used to holding on to those, and then you just never get rid of them. And so I always got to figure out a way to not hold on to them forever, but you need to hold on to them long enough. You're right. You want to ship that stuff back to the manufacturer in that box.
My wife keeps me on task on that, getting rid of them.
That's good. Well, Gordon, what do you got for us this evening?
We already talked about LastPass a little bit, which I think Leo Laporte and Steve Gibson's Security Now podcast have talked about it before. But I don't know, working in enterprise IT and then with all the issues I've been having with security, I don't know, I just like the KeePass a lot better. Keep it local, keep it out of the cloud.
So why wouldn't I just use KeePass? I mean, what's the disadvantage to keep?
Well, LastPass has they have some extensions, some add-ins that you can put right into the browser.
Okay.
And then it can notice what web page you're on and reference it. You can just hit one button and it'll drop your username and password right out of your password safe into it.
Okay. So there's some convenience.
Yeah, with KeePass, if I need to go look up the password, I have to go open it, put in my master password, and then search for my application that I have it stored in.
Okay, that makes sense.
LastPass is kind of like RoboForm, isn't it? Because I think RoboForm is similar. It keeps your passwords and your bookmarks in the cloud.
But RoboForm also stores all your personal information as well, right? Your name, address, pre-fill.
So. Yeah, RoboForm has two levels. You can do it on the cloud, or you can also do it locally on your computer. I've had a very good experience using RoboForm on computers before. Literally any site you go to, it can autofill any contact information and passwords and stuff, and I've never had a problem with it, and it's pretty reliable software, and they keep it up to date. So if there is, you know, like the internet, I don't know if it's just me, but I've never had consistent performance with the Internet Explorer password manager. Just kind of some websites, it'll randomly show up. Some sites, it never does. Some sites, if you click the username box a couple times, it shows up. So RoboForm is just a really nice integration for cross-platform success.
Mm. Now, Chrome has that built in as well, right?
It does. Chrome's a bit hit and miss in the current version as well, I've found.
Okay.
I've got a particular site that I use almost daily for some club stuff that I do, and there's two boxes where I put in a username and password, and the first one it does it, and the second one it doesn't.
Hmm.
And it's exactly the same username, it's the same password, and it's a pain.
Although Chrome does seem more reliable with the built-in password stuff than Internet does, for sure.
Yeah, I don't use the built-in password stuff on any of the browsers. For whatever reason, that doesn't appeal to me, but I do like the form capability. Fill in the forms. You know, you start typing and it goes, oh, hey, this is a form. Which one, you've done this before, which one of these do you want to select? And so it'll, you know, it'll give you an option. That I found to be very, very convenient and work pretty well within Chrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and most of that stuff's your address, in which case that's
right,
for the
correct.
Most people
correct.
That's public information anyways.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm real comfortable with that. So
yeah.
Yeah, LastPass is kind of nice, especially in the premium version, though, because, I mean, to get all your passwords and whatnot down onto your mobile device and the ability to do two-factor authentication is very, very cool. That's when you send your passwords out to a USB key. So when you export to them, that's kind of nice, and it's $1 a month. So
oh, it's not too bad.
When you look at it that way, it's pretty good value if you've got a lot of passwords that you... One need to generate because it does random generation as well for you, and to have them online at any given time, not a bad price.
Yeah, no, it's super cost effective.
Mm. Yeah, what else you got, Gordon?
So the other thing I was looking at for the average guy was NameBench. It's a Google coded. Analyzes your domain name server, so whether you're using your ISPs, which is what you'd be using if you just set up your router with your modem and had internet. There's OpenDNS, Google DNS, and what this tool kind of does is it goes through, you put in your location information, it goes out there and it'll tell you which DNS server is actually the fastest for you.
Wow.
And then you can make those alterations to your router to pull from a different DNS server if you want, based off which one's faster.
Now, like OpenDNS, that's one of their big advertising slogans, right, is that they're faster than your ISP DNS, right?
Yep.
So here's a chance for you to go and prove it. I love on the website, I love the first line. Are you a power user with 5 minutes to spare? that's pretty funny. So it's like a benchmark for it really does bench, and it would be different for everybody, right? Because not everybody uses the same DNS servers to get their info.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I ran it actually gave me OpenDNS back as the fastest, and then I ran it again a month ago, and my ISP made some changes, and it actually came back with my ISP being the fastest DNS. So.
Now, what if I'm already an OpenDNS user and I run this? Is it agnostic to that? Do I need to shut off OpenDNS before I can run a tool like this?
So it'll run regardless of what DNS server you're currently utilizing. That won't make a difference.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Andrew, is this something you would you want to give a try with your new internet speed that you got available to you?
Yeah, I must admit, I've actually just downloaded it, and I'm running it at the moment to see what it comes back with.
Interesting.
So it's telling me I've got 4,515 name servers to check, and I'll come back and say and give some feedback once it's finished.
Christian, do you worry much about DNS servers in your world and as far as what stuff's going through, or do you just pretty much take whatever's out there?
No, for regular stuff, I'm not really concerned about DNS servers. Like I mentioned last week on the podcast, I've been using the OpenDNS for our home network, and that seems to work well. So I'd say for the average user, if you want to get into something like that, try OpenDNS. It's pretty reliable.
Yeah, I've had great success with it as well. I just put it on the router. It helps filter and keep the kids out of some nasty stuff without me having to do very much.
Right.
I'm using Google's DNS servers at the moment.
Really?
Yeah, 8.8.8.8, and I can't remember what the other one is offhand, but that sped up our DNS resolution immensely.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Gordon, you got your hands full back there, don't you?
Gordon's... I do. I can let everybody hear for just a little bit.
It's too bad.
The world crashing.
Eventually, we'll get these podcasts on video, and I think it's a lot of fun for folks to know. You know, we're guys, and you're Mr. Mom tonight, right? And you're taking care of your kids and trying to podcast, and you're doing a great job of it. So nice work, Gordon. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, not a big deal. You know. Hopefully, with this weekend being Mother's Day, we talked about that a little bit last night on the Home Server Show. You know, guys, and it's mostly guys, and I'd love to hear from any gals who actually listen to this podcast. I'm sure there's none, but if there happens to be one, send me an email and tell me why you listen podcast at theaverageguy.tv. But guys, it is Mother's Day this weekend, so make sure, I know we all have, everybody's got a mom, and make sure you get out there and recognize your mom or remember your mom in some way and do that. That's a big deal. I don't do enough of that, and I need to encourage my kids to do a little more of that for their mom as well, so make sure you get that done. Well, guys, anything else? We've blown through our show notes, and we're actually spectacular on time. Anything else coming up from a tech perspective that we might have missed?
No, I think that's a wrap.
All right, good stuff. Well,
got it covered.
We will do it all over again next week. I'll remind folks if they want to listen to the show live, we do broadcast each and every week on Thursday nights. Right there at theaverageguy.tv/live. You can listen to us there and come in. It's absolutely free. And some good guys show up and chat from time to time. John Zadler's out there tonight. So, John, thanks for joining us in chat tonight. And generally my wife's out there as well, chatting it up with the folks that join us. So I turned her into a little podcast geek.
We've got one of Christian's groupies out there.
Yeah, I think Bandit was out there earlier. And that's – who is that, Christian?
He is Bandit? A moderator. At BIOS Modes.
Okay. And
and wants to earn his way into a show spot sometime.
Oh, really?
Future.
Well, maybe would he be interested in maybe doing a guest appearance on the Home Tech show?
He might be.
All right. Well, we'll have to ask him. So we'll have to try that here in the weeks that are ahead. If you do want to contact the show again, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can also find us on iTunes or go to the site and grab the RSS feed. You can find us on Facebook at The Average Guy Network, and you can follow me at Jay Collison on Twitter. Andrew, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is Unreal Shots, and if you want us to talk about anything and you use Delicious, if you use the tag The Average Guy, one word, we can pick that up in our RSS feed and talk about it for you.
Did we get? We talked about that last week, and did we get anybody but you and me to?
Didn't get a sausage.
All right, so Andrew and I went out and tagged a bunch of stuff using what's the tag again?
The Average Guy.
The Average Guy, all one word, right?
Yep.
And we tagged a few things. I did it early in the week, but nobody else joined us. Let's give it a try. So if you didn't get to it last week and you forgot about it by the time you got home, you know, and you were listening to the podcast in your car, give it another shot. Tag it out there, and I'm kind of interested in this Delicious solution. I haven't used it before, but it does have some interesting aspects to it. So give that a shot. Next week, Bill Penman will be with us on the show, and so he'll join Andrew and Christian, and we'll be back for another Home Tech podcast 24 hours from now. Guys, have a great week, and again, thanks for listening, and have a good evening. Good night. little chat around that. Andrew, you've got the and really the WebOS that is number two.
Yeah,
on tablets.
Yeah, that's what ZDNet rated it at.
Now rate. This is their rating, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Cure. Yeah. Cure
I actually went and plugged in my Palm Pre. I got so excited. All right. So.